I'll call this meeting to order. Let's start with the flag salute.
Of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
May we have a roll call, please?
Director Sesenya.
Here.
Director Fourcroy.
I'm here.
Director Gatchell.
Here.
Vice President Womack.
Present.
President Ohilski.
Did you get that? He's here.
I see him coming. Thanks.
Okay. You want to take over?
You can go ahead and probably get us to close session.
We are going into closed section for public employee government code 54957B1.
There is no public comment online.
And none in the boardroom.
Okay, so the board adjourned to closed session and we're reconvening to open session. There is no report out of closed session. However, we may have a motion for discussion in open session today.
I'll make the motion that we have a discussion about public employment and the general manager contract.
And his salary?
Second.
And his salary.
Okay. All right, so we'll have a discussion about those items. So we did our evaluation, which Ron came out very highly on. Very, very good general manager. And as part of our annual evaluation, we need to decide what he gets for his upcoming salary, if there's an increase or not increase. So that's what we're going to talk about right now. So.
Well, before we just throw that salary number out, I'll spare you all the comments that were generated as part of the review, but we're lucky to have Mr. Munns. We know it, and we appreciate everything you do. And I think that we at least need to offer him a CPI cost of living.
Well, as I understand it, Margaret and Laura both got a 3% CPI increase. Field crew got a 4%, but I think he's in the office like everybody else. So my thought would be that we approve a 3% increase for the best general manager in the history of the earth.
And that was a motion, right? And I'll second that.
Okay.
Anybody do I need to take public comment on this first, Marshall?
Well, we're still discussing here. Hold on.
Okay. Yes, we're discussing. Okay. Motion on hold.
Okay. I agree with the CPI increase for sure. Ron has done an exceptional job over the last 5 years. And I think that's a fair increase for him.
Yep. Agree.
It's pretty stunning.
Thank you, Ron, for everything.
Stunning amount of work that he's accomplished. We are very lucky to have him. So a 3% seems fair.
Okay, let's go to public comment. Does anybody have any public comment on the general manager's salary?
If you're online and you'd like to make a comment, please raise your hand. There is none online.
Okay, we have one in the room.
3%? Is that the number we're talking about?
Yes, sir.
Wow. I personally don't think it's enough when you consider what he's saved this district. He's basically our grant writer. Look how many grants have been established and rolled into the district. He's also been a member of the water rate study group for the last, even when he wasn't the general manager, the last five, which has saved the district probably $35,000, a rate study report. He's here at 7 in the morning because, or earlier, because I drive by at that time. Sometimes I call him and say I beat him into town. He's here late at night. 3% is fine. My concern is whatever it takes to keep him, because he's at that point where he could say enough's enough. And I want to retire and I want to enjoy surfing and vacations with his wife and stuff. We don't want to lose him. This by far is the best general manager this district has ever had. And it'll be a sad day when he says enough's enough. Thank you.
Thank you.
Just to let you know, we did have a cloning discussion tonight as part of that.
My name is Pam Ouellette. I've worked with Ron with the city of San Luis. I know that Ron has lived here for years. He's always had a vested interest in the community. In the past, we've had general managers that were not. Ron's expertise and his caring for this community shows in the work that he does. When we had that berm collapse, he was out there till midnight doing what needed to be done when he didn't really have to be there, but he was. Somebody that cares that much for the community, I don't think 3% is enough. I won't throw a number out, but I think you kind of need to up that to show our appreciation. We have a surplus. You know, we're a solvent community, and it's been a while since we had that. But with his leadership and guidance, we're pretty healthy. So pay it forward. Thanks.
Thank you. There's nobody else? No other public comment? Okay. Ron, would you like to just have a, say anything?
Well, I'm fairly speechless, which is unusual. But I appreciate it. And when we were talking, we've been very blessed to have a board that we've had for the last 5 years that I've been here. We've got a lot done. This community, I've been here since 1975. Is awesome. We've been through a lot as a community, a lot of ups and downs. And I think we're on a good up right now. Things are getting done. People are taking notice of what we need to do. So anyway, long story short, I feel very blessed to be here. And thank you very much for all the comments.
But we'll close public comment. Any further discussion or?
I guess I would add that any money saved by not paying him what he's worth, we're going to put into getting help for him, because we've got a lot going on in the next year or two, an awful lot. And so Superman has his limits. And so we recognize that, but we sure appreciate you. And I think there's been a motion and a second.
Yeah.
And I agree he's worth more, but he actually is asking for less. And this is more than he's. But we just feel not even doing the CPI is not enough. I mean, that we don't feel good about doing less than the CPI. Okay, go ahead.
I think we need a call for a vote.
Yeah, I think. Okay. We don't need a roll call, do we, Laura?
No, we do not.
Okay. Well, let's take a roll call anyway. Laura, we'll take a roll call, please.
Of course. President Ohilski.
Yes.
Director Cesena.
Yes.
Director Forcroy.
Yes.
Director Gatchell.
Yes.
Vice President Womack.
Yes.
Okay, that ends that item. So thank you for your service, Ron.
Thank you.
We look forward to working with you for another year.
Yes.
And longer.
And longer. President Ohilski, I forgot to mention that Province Battalion Chief Province said they needed to postpone the pinning.
Okay.
So we can take public comment on it, and we will do that next month.
So item number 6, administer firefighters' oaths to new Station 15 reserve firefighters. So is there any public comment on this item?
If you're online, raise your hand. There's none online.
Okay, seeing none, then we'll move on to item number 7.
It's too bad. I was kind of looking forward to that. That's always a fun event, but I understand there's probably a bit going on right now.
That and some of the new recruits hadn't finished all the certifications they needed to take the oath.
Oh. Okay, so we'll move on to item number 7, public safety reports. 7A is the fire department report.
We just have the written one this this time around. Chief Province has been out of the county for the last 3 weeks, and so he said he would be back next month as well.
Okay. The fire department, or pardon me, the sheriff department report?
We have CHP online.
Well, let's take CHP then.
Okay.
CHP, are you there?
Yep, I'm getting everything taken care of. Let me log on. There I am. Hey, how are you guys doing this evening? Well, we got a pretty quick and easy report for you for the month of July. It looks like we had 11 total traffic accidents investigated in the Los Osos area. Breakdown on those is we had one major injury collision. That was a bicyclist that fell off and then broke their leg. We had two minor injury crashes, 5 non-injury, 2 misdemeanor hit and runs, and then 1 misdemeanor DUI crash. Other than that, it was not too much going on in the community of Los Osos this last month, and I'm open for questions if you guys have anything.
Thank you. Anybody have any questions? School's going back pretty soon, right?
Yeah, school should be back going into session, I think, in the next 2 weeks. We will be increasing patrols in the area during that first week of school, just to remind everybody to slow down and watch out for the kids in the crosswalks.
Thank you for that reminder. Nope. Okay, Sheriff Department report?
I don't see them online.
There's a little excitement yesterday.
Yes, we'll get that report in September.
Okay, I guess. Okay, so we'll go to general action items number 8.
I need to take public comment real quick.
Oh, I'm sorry, my mistake.
If you'd like to make a public comment on the public safety reports in your online, please raise your hand. And if you're in the boardroom, please come up to the podium.
None in the room.
There's none online.
Okay, now I can move on to item agenda or general action items. Item 8A, S&T Mutual Water Company Water System Consolidation Request. Recommend conceptual approval of the water system consolidation request from S&T Mutual Water Company.
Great. I have a quick presentation for this, and we do have representatives from S&T that are here to answer any questions. Just a little bit of background for everyone. Since 2022, the district has been working with S&T on resiliency measures and opportunities to find redundancy for their water system. They do rely on one well that has been experiencing elevated nitrates, and it's become more and more problematic. We've also provided emergency maintenance response on an on-call basis. We haven't had to use that. But when they've got 2 part-time employees, and when they're not in town, we've offered to take calls if needed. It did become apparent to the S&T board that their single source was vulnerable with the rising nitrates. And they've had some system maintenance requirements, and were moving beyond what they could both physically and financially manage. They did an alternatives analysis for consolidation, which included the CSD, obviously, Golden State Water, and we do have a representative from Golden State in the here tonight as well, and the County of San Luis Obispo, because they're actually regulated by the Department of Public Health for the county. The results pointed to us being the best option. They based it on, they had 4 criteria in the report, and the report is online and is part of the agenda packet. Resiliency and supply, both Golden State and CSD rank high there because we are working together to solve our water issues. Ease of connection, Golden State is in closer proximity. but our water rates and future costs are better because we do have lower water rates than Golden State. And the main one in my mind was governance and operations. You know, being a public water system, they can come here, participate in water rate discussions, and technically they could be on our board of directors already. They are part of within our boundary and part of the CSR, part of the community services district. It was important for them to do shareholder outreach, a mutual company. For people that don't understand mutuals, each customer is actually a shareholder in the company. They had two board meetings. I attended one of them. They sent out mailers and links of information. It had it on the website to get people to read the information. Had yard signs even that directed them to the website. They did emails to the shareholders, and then, of course, answering questions and comments received by email and or phone. The Utilities Advisory Committee did review this at their last meeting. They had a very in-depth discussion regarding the report, and they did have questions about ST's infrastructure and other, just great questions. And Golden State did submit a letter which outlined their concerns about the consolidation, and that was in the agenda packet as well. And there's quite a bit of discussion around that. S&T has submitted a follow-up paper to address some of those concerns, and they are here tonight again to talk to that if there are any questions. And by the end of the night, the UAC recommended conceptual approval, that the board consider conceptual approval. So what does consolidation mean to the district? Well, if it is conceptually approved, there are multiple steps we'd have to go through. This process could take a year or even more if we start down this path. There are seven steps designed for the system and to confirm and the commitment to consolidation. The first three already been checked off basically by S&T. Conceptually approved, we would move on to discussing this with the Division of Drinking Water, which is the state agency that would be making most of the decisions. We'd be looking at funding and of the consolidation and changing of the boundaries for our water service area, and then go through the ultimately go to dissolving of their system and then becoming part of us. And this bullet speaks to that. You know, the shareholders, if they decide to come to us, they become district customers and S&T would dissolve. And if the partnership's approved, we would notify the state board. And this is important. S&T will bear the full burden on applying for grants and getting the financial resources for the consolidation project. There would be staff time involved, mainly mine, to help facilitate the process and answer questions. Excuse me, I got to take a drink of water. There is a grant program called SAFER that provides financial incentives, and that's for small water systems statewide that are experiencing issues, and the encouragement is financial incentives to help nudge those consolidations along. That's the end of my presentation. Here to answer any questions that I can, but again, we do have representatives from S&T and Golden State on hand.
Okay. Thank you. I have a question, just a basic question. What does conceptually approved mean?
Well, at some point you're going to approve it if we get to the end.
Right.
And so conceptually is now allowing me and S&T to move forward. We need a letter from the district saying that we are interested in the consolidation.
Okay.
There's multiple steps to get to the very end.
Okay. Are they going to be paying for our time?
We don't have a reimbursement agreement. No.
Well, shouldn't we?
That would be up to the board.
How many hours do you imagine you've spent on this already?
Not that many. It's been a few meetings.
Nowhere near a couple hundred hours. I thought I'd heard that thrown around somewhere,
no.
Which is a couple of months of staff time,
no.
Okay. I just want to make sure about that.
and I don't track it, but I say less than 20.
How much in the future?
Don't know that yet. Because they're going to be handling all the paperwork. My involvement would be in the decision, bringing, knowing what the decision points are and bringing that to the board.
Well, it sounds like your involvement's pretty managerial, and that's not a huge use of your time, right?
We can revisit that if it appears like it is. Because there may be funding available from the SAFER grant as well to help that reimbursement.
Okay. So that's something we can deal with as this moves forward.
Mr. President, Daniel Chung, legal counsel. So I think conceptual approval, it has the word approval in it, as you know. But really, I think the closest analogy and the easiest way to understand is its direction to staff. So if you'd like to direct staff to go back to S&T and to talk about a reimbursement process, you can do that. But really, this is just direction to staff on whether you as a board are okay moving forward with this process. There's no contract or agreement that you're entering into by
okay. It's just a word of approval concern to me.
That's right. That's right. But it's really just that's what the conceptual is, which is it's just giving your staff direction on whether or not to move forward. Because if you don't want to move forward, that's very good direction for your staff to have so that they cut off the process.
All right, we're putting direction to staff in the notes here, so we have that on the record.
Well, conceptually, I like this idea. I think it's a really cost-effective way for S&T to essentially get more wells connected to their taps, because that's the problem. Right now they have one well. It's being impacted by nitrates. So if we're able to essentially hook them up to our system, the CSD is very cost effective at that in our community, gives them the ability for local governance, and they're already part of the district. So for me, it makes a lot of sense. So I appreciate your work on this.
I have a question. You mentioned that there have been additional communications from S&T in response maybe to comments made at the UAC. The consolidation analysis that we have in our board packet, edit code 10, June 3rd, 2024, is that what we saw at UAC, or has it been updated? Is this the update you referred to?
The physical report wasn't updated. What they did was supply a document that I believe is at the very end of the packet that re-looked at like the rates and then the cost benefit, that kind of stuff. Those are issues that were brought up.
Attachment 3, is that? Okay, I just wanted to make sure, because I know there were some concerns legitimately brought up at UAC, and I want to make sure that Golden State's issues are addressed.
Right.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, there's UAC. Yeah.
Yeah, we had a lengthy discussion about this.
Yeah, I tried to summarize them in the report in those four bullets.
Yeah, you did. Yeah. You did a very fine job. I just wanted to make sure that we're seeing if there was anything updated that we had a look at it. Okay, thank you.
Okay.
I'd like to point out that we don't have a profit motive also in providing water. I think that's a benefit.
Okay, we'll take open public comment then. If you'd like to speak, please step up to the podium.
And if you're online, please raise your hand.
Thank you, Mr. President. Good evening, board members. My name is Jeff Edwards. And I'm a 48-year resident of Los Osos. This evening, however, I'd like to object to any further consideration of the varied requests made by S&T Mutual for three fundamental reasons. One, as we heard tonight, Ron Munns is an outstanding general manager, but he's only one man and by his own admission will be retiring permanently in the very near term. And this district, in my view, has three top priorities. One, close out FEMA and the whole Cabrillo Estates drainage basin flood issue. Secondly, make a decision about the future of the fire station facilities. And thirdly, completion of the state water project Intertie Pipeline, Those are the priorities, not S&T. Secondly, absorbing S&T has the potential to strain critically important relations with Golden State Water. A good relationship is vital to groundwater basin management success and all that that entails. Thirdly, S&T has been a divisive member of the Basin Management Committee, and I encourage you, as evidence, to watch the May 20th meeting. It is embarrassing. I would be embarrassed for S&T. Moreover, when the Division of Financial Assistance of the Department of Water Resources, not drinking water, but DFA, when they understand that Golden State Water Company is contiguous to S&T and a connection could be made for $30,000 as compared to a multi-million dollar connection of 1 mile or more through Golden State Water Company service area, they're going to reject the grant application. It will be dead on arrival. It's not feasible. And in any access that is contemplated for the zero interest loan that may be forthcoming, that won't happen either. Please don't waste any more of the public's time on this, your board's time, or certainly staff. The UAC meeting that I attended on the 17th of July, where the consolidation analysis was presented, the preparer of this report didn't even show up. She sent another member of their board that could not answer questions. Mr. Sassina can verify that. So in the recent past, S&T has spent tens of thousands of dollars tilting at windmills, hiring consultants, trying to find somebody that will fix their problem. And I'm sorry, but it's their own problem. And I'm a Golden State Water Company when you want to talk about rates. And for five units, and I'll conclude with this, for five units of water on a monthly basis, I pay $128.93. Okay, that's the same amount of water from S&T is $107.50. All right,
thank you. Thank you.
Don't waste any more time.
Thank you.
Look at the very end of the staff report. There's a comparison.
I saw them. Do I press a button?
Oh, I got it.
Okay, you've got it. Thanks, Ron. Hi, everybody. I'm Julie McAdon. I'm the president of S&T Water Company. And I just wanted to respond that it's really important for our shareholders to have local governance. And that's why we feel strongly that you guys would be a great fit for us. And this is just not an option with Golden State Water. And secondly, S&T, we don't have to consolidate. Like we don't, like we're fine. No one is forcing us to do this. We are sustainable. We could drill wells. We could do other things, but we are coming to you and saying, hey, we're looking long-term. Let's do this. Federal agencies, they want small water systems to consolidate. And so we're on that path, you know? And just commenting on Jeff Edwards' position, you know, we have a good working relationship with Golden State. I don't know where that comes from, and I'm just really confused why Mr. Edwards is so involved and cares about what S&T does. He's not an S&T shareholder. Our shareholders have said that they resoundingly want to come with you guys. So, yeah. That's it.
Thank you. Becky McFarland. I'm so glad this is happening tonight when there's people at this meeting because there's so many. I mean, this is important. Other things people should be hearing about their water supply and participating. I'm all for S&T joining the CSD. I agree. Let's go with local. Nothing against Mark. I like Mark. I'm a Golden State Water person. I used to have two shares in it so I could stand at meetings and go as a shareholder. But when they started losing money, I sold my shares. but I do want to say S&T's participation, especially Beth Reinecke on the BMC, has been vital. She puts out information that you won't hear from other members of the board. I'm not sure why, but she's an honest, hardworking person with incredible knowledge, and you guys are really lucky to have her. I did want to bring up that in the information that S&T provided for tonight, they were looking, you know, they're looking for a resilient, redundant, and safe secondary source of water. It's important for everyone in this room to realize why they have to do that. We have seawater intrusion all the way in Weld. It's not the whole town, but all the way to Palisades Avenue. It's moved in nearly a mile since I moved here in 85. So we have water issues. You know, Coastal Commission and county like to say, oh, we're not in overdraft. We've been overdrafted. We still have nitrates. S&T is getting nitrates from where? I mean, there's many, many homes in this town that are not on the sewer. Cabrillo Estates, I think, is it Bayview Heights, and across South Bay Boulevard. Some are on large properties, but they still have septic tanks. That needs to be cleaned up. And in addition, they mention about the state water intertie. You should also know that studies and our state water resources board have finally admitted that the project is already 500% overprescribed. So it's paper water we're talking about. I wish it wasn't. I wish that wasn't true. But people, you know, get online and start reading about this. One of the misguided projects that were built on paper water is our coastal branch to the state water project. That's where all of our, excuse me, this never gets easier, but please stand up and yay S&T for joining CSD. Thank you.
Good evening, directors. Mark Zimmer, general manager for Golden State Water Company. Here tonight to make a few comments and follow up on the comments Golden State provided at the Utility Advisory Committee meeting. We very much appreciate staff's report inclusion of our comment letter and the additional analysis by S&T evaluating the financial impact on its customers. I did want to point out, however, a few inaccuracies that we noticed in the current analysis. The rate analysis still compares LOCSD and S&T's bi-monthly billing to Golden State's monthly billing. The analysis also relies on average water use rather than the median water use. Both of these factors result in showing a large discrepancy between customer billing than actually exists. It also is worth noting that the inclusion of the profit line item in the rate comparison is misleading to Golden State's rate setting process and seems to suggest that Golden State being a private company is a negative factor for the customers and their rates. However, Golden State being a regulated company has a unique benefit to its customers in the basin as a whole. Its funding mechanism allows us, for example, to invest in infrastructure to provide safe, reliable service to its customers. With regards to the analysis of consolidation cost, we see that the new estimated cost connecting LOCSD system would be $1.8 million. The cost presumably that would be borne upon S&T and LOCSD customers. However, we don't see the inclusion of the additional cost of financing, permitting, environmental review, and ongoing maintenance. There may also be additional costs associated with the complications of having the connection run through Golden State Water's service area. The financial impact analysis does not account for the potential compensation S&T customers would be entitled to in the consolidation with Golden State Water Company. Ultimately, Golden State is supportive of a solution that is in the best interest of the community and the long-term health of the basin. To this end, we look forward to the opportunity to meet with the purveyors to discuss the various consolidation alternatives and determine which option most benefits S&T customers, the basin, and the community at large. I'm also available to take any questions you may have.
Thank you, Mark.
All right, thank you.
Hello, Emily Miggins, Los Osos resident. I just want to say I think it's a great move, and I just want to back up what Becky said about Beth Reinecke in particular and her participation on the Basin Management Committee. She is a scientist. She presents herself like a scientist. She has done incredible work, and I think it needs to be acknowledged publicly. I thank you for being a scientist. But I want to remind everyone here, Ron and company, that we had a lot of talk 6 weeks ago at the Coastal Commission and at the BMC meeting that we are trending towards sustainability. And the water purveyor that is S&T is once again kind of being the canary in the coal mine to talk about what is happening with data. And I think that this move of consolidation to a public utility is an excellent move, because to, you know, all my neighbors out in Los Osos, we are not on trend for sustainability. You know, science is constantly debated, but it really needs to be put out there that the CSD is working very hard. Golden State is working hard. And S&T has been working very hard to figure out this question. But when you read a letter and a report like S&T has put out there for the Anastasi conversation with the Board of Supervisors on October 31st, 2023, and what we've been hearing about not just nitrates, but chloride metrics rising, which indicates seawater intrusion, and then on top of it, forever chemicals. Most of our community, even though people have lived here for 40 and 50 years, are not participating like we're participating tonight about, you know, most likely Montana de Oro. Get involved. Listen, we have one aquifer. We don't have the intertie yet. I know Ron's working hard with the BMC on this question. And, you know, I thank you, Mark. I enjoy your presentations too. It's important that you stay involved, because I got to tell you, there's only a handful of us that stay on this. And again, thank you, Beth, for your work.
Good evening. I'm Julie Tacker.
Wow. Do it publicly. Okay, wow. Get up on the microphone and get it on the record. No, well, you did it to Beth, and now you're doing this. I asked. That was not, it's constant.
Excuse me.
Well, you know what? What about that? You wanted to be excited?
President, excuse me.
President Odelsky, please.
Please. Okay. Your time will start over again.
Thank you. Good evening. My name is Julie Tacker. I've lived here since 1971. If I do the math, that's 53 years. I'm a Golden State water customer. I'm a Los Osos CSD water customer. And I'm a private well owner. And I've been involved in the basin. Okay? And I'm not going away.
Excuse me, you're going to have to leave. Go. Yes, you are.
I just got attacked in the back of the room.
We're taking a break right now.
Thank you, Mr. President.
All right, the recess is over. We'll call them, bring the meeting back to order. Again, I would appreciate it if there is none of that back and forth going in the back of the room. Otherwise, as our legal counsel mentioned, we will have to escort you out. So with that being said, Julie, we'll start over again.
Three times the charm. Again, Julie Tacker. I won't go into how long I've lived here in the water purveyors that I am a shareholder in. I'm a shareholder in this basin, and I have the right to speak. I'd like to speak to Marshall's discussion at the beginning of, before the item really opened, about a reimbursement agreement. I'd like your board to direct staff to, at the bare minimum, track his hours. Preferably, I'd like your board to direct legal counsel to draft a reimbursement agreement, because just as you went on about Ron's value, his time is valuable. And while you may want to pay him more, you need to be reimbursed for the time he does spend on things that are not district business. Trust me, the S&T staff is getting paid to talk to Ron. So that needs to be compensated to the district, his time. With regard to the motion that is on the screen and that was in the staff report, I like what Mr. Chung said about maybe just changing that, and I recommend that the board direct staff to explore water system consolidation from S&T if you choose to do that tonight, that it is just direction to staff. The president of the S&T board, the other Julie in the room, she said that shareholders resoundingly want to go with you guys. That's a quote. Well, if you use the June 5th staff report that was presented to the shareholders, that's fraught with errors and mathematical problems, of course, they're going to resoundingly want to go with you guys. I think this needs to be fixed first. Get the apples and apples comparisons. Golden State is telling you that there's mathematical errors. Mr. Marketson will tell you there's mathematical errors. Science is math. Fix the math, and then we can talk about apples and apples comparisons and what this is really actually going to look like. And I don't want it to end up in my bill through Ron's time. Thank you.
Thank you.
Go.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry.
Lindy Owen from Los Osos. I think that what I don't see here is a really good pros and cons list for our CSD water company versus Golden State's water company. I think if you can put them, again, the math needs to kind of jive together. So I would suggest that a little bit of that be put together so that it's a little bit more clear. And then I personally think that the entire community, and nothing against Mark Zimmer, he's fabulous with Golden State, but I like the idea of a not-for-profit utility, and always I think that's always the can be to the benefit of the people. Again, pros and cons, what it would cost for them to for S&T to go with them versus to go with us, and what we have to put in to allow that process. And I just want to remind everybody, the S&T area is right below Cabrillo Estates, which is, it doesn't take rocket science to figure out that 300 septic tanks flowing down a hill on a grade are going right into that area. And that's where the pollution is. Regional Water Quality Control Board exempted that area. And I think they have a role to play here, too. Whether the penalty go to, I don't want to get anybody on the bad end of this, but those houses need to be taken off of the septic tanks and put onto the sewer system. That's a part. But in the meanwhile, the wells that S&T are trying to use are polluted with nitrates.
Thank you.
From that.
If there's anybody after Richard, would you please get up and stand behind him, please?
Richard Margetson. Chuck, did that bring back memories of Move the Sewer?
We haven't had a rocking meeting in quite a while.
For a person who's had meetings stopped and been asked to leave the room, that was interesting.
The will of the people.
if that's what that's the direction they want to go, this is just at the conceptual start of this process. And if there's cost and they're willing to bear the burden of those initial costs to see where this goes, they haven't spent any money on the connection yet, or nobody spent any money. You know, let them do it. They should have the right to make the decision of what direction they want to go. And then I just, there's wording that just bothers me that's out there that we heard at the Coastal Commission, which I wasn't happy with that decision, but that, you know, we're not trending towards sustainability. Okay, well, maybe the word trending should be taken out. Maybe we're working towards it. I mean, if we're not moving that direction for sustainability at some point, then why are we having Ron work on these projects like the Intertie or the East Side Well, those type of things? Why are we just, you know, chuck it all and say, that's not the direction the board wants to go? So maybe the word trending needs to be changed to working towards or moving towards or whatever. But that's keeping him very busy. And I believe we are trending towards eventual sustainability. Water consumption, when I got involved back in after the district was formed, water consumption is less than 50% of what it was at that point in this community. More than 50% reduction in water consumption. So we are moving in a direction to try to save this basin for the current customers. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hello. Hi, I'm Beth Ranicki. I'm with S&T Mutual Water Company. And I'm here to address not only some things that were mentioned tonight, but I mean, I wasn't here at the UAC meeting, and I wouldn't normally say this, but I was actually serving for the Air National Guard, Jeff. I am a public servant. I'm not putting this out there as a bomb so that Aaron can come here and try to field questions that only I can answer because I put it together. That those comments were mean and cruel and completely unnecessary. I stand by what I put together. The reason why there's not another report is because the intent of that report was for the S&T shareholder. That was put together to inform them of the options. So I think it's important that we decipher what this is and what this is not. That report was put together to the shareholder. Yes, it did include Golden State's 2027 rates for good reason. If I was a shareholder and someone put that analysis together and neglected to mention that there's a 20 to 30% increase on the horizon, I would be upset. I needed to let them know. I also included the 2024 rates. So, you know, this is not a contentious item. It shouldn't be a contentious item. I'm trying to inform. I feel like I put things together pretty neutrally. I mean, I stated facts, you know. So some of the things that were mentioned, and I want to say this because there seems to be this division concept that's being created between the CSC and Golden State. Not true. I like Mark. I've worked with Mark for many years. This is not about Golden State versus CSC. This is about what's right for the S&T shareholder. I put the information together as I was directed by the board. Yes, there was one typo that I will correct in future additions, but it was the number of people in the Golden State service area. I felt like it was minor and not consequential to the point where I needed to go in and rehash it, do a new edit code, but there will be more in the future once we decide to actually embark on this project. So, and as far as safe and affordable and resilient water, yes, Golden State and the CSD both represent good options for us, but there are distinct differences. Governance is a big deal. I mean, you can see here in this room right now, showing up to a meeting and voicing your opinion means something. So I don't know. I can answer any questions. And I would also like to point out that the last two pages were only put together to address issues that were discussed in the UAC meeting. It's primarily numbers, but I hope I made it clear enough to, I guess, make sense. I mean, kind of in its own isolated form. But if you have any questions, this one right here is a big one. It was mentioned, and I take full responsibility for it. I didn't put it together well enough in the report. But remember, I was also there doing a presentation for the shareholders. They could ask me questions directly. Unfortunately, I couldn't be here at the last meeting. I would have been if I could have been. And if you can't follow it across the line, just ask me. I have the Excel file. I'd be happy to share it. It's not a secret. So let me see what else. Project cost. Are you okay with me speaking more?
No.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
Okay.
Your time's up.
Okay. Thank you.
Any further speakers in the house? Oh, there we go.
Pamela Las Osos, CSD. I'm reading the motion. It says that we're asking the board's being asked to conceptually approve the water system consolidation. That doesn't mean that it's going to happen. It seems to me that we should all just kind of take a step back. Everybody do their homework. Have these meetings, come to an understanding of what it's all going to turn out to be. And at the end of the day, if it doesn't work out, then it doesn't work out. And if it does, then you take steps forward. So I've heard a lot of futuring about the good and bad and the ugly of this, a lot of difference of opinions, but it's just a conceptual approval so that they can go ahead and do their homework and sit down and have their meetings and figure out how best to address it. If it benefits S&T to go with the CSD, if it benefits them to go with Golden State, you know, there's three people looking at this or three different water purveyors looking at this. So there's no harm in letting those discussions happen and see how it turns out.
Thank you. Any further? Laura, do you have anybody online?
There is none online.
Okay, we'll close public comment and bring it back. I think that legal counsel in answer to my question made a good comment. So what I'd like the motion to say is that the board directs staff to pursue the water system consolidation request from S&T Mutual Water Company rather than conceptual approval. Just say pursue.
I'm not okay with that, because that says to me we're giving him direction to go after it. Right. We are considering this request. We're not pursuing anything. We are not after anything. Maybe consider the consolidation request, but I don't like the word pursue.
If I can interject here, basically what S&T and Division of Drinking Water is going to want is a conceptual approval that we are serious about doing this.
Yeah.
So that's the reason it's worded that way. I understand it. But again, this isn't, as Pam said, this isn't the final decision. This is just to start the process.
It's to allow them to continue their homework. We've got a long way to go. As Mr. Edwards pointed out, there will be state agencies reviewing these applications for grants and the whole consolidation process very thoroughly. We're keeping the ball rolling. That's all we're doing here.
So, legal counsel, yes. Could you discuss their
certainly, that, please? Yes, Mr. President. I'm happy to clarify my comment. So I'll go to your general manager's very thorough report. This is on page 3. So based on the discussions to date, and if the board approves in concept the consolidation, which is the motion that's being recommended by your staff, the project will begin at step 4, which is to call the Division of Drinking Water District office and to continue that conversation. Your conceptual approval, not just, again, if you change the motion, your conceptual approval is needed in order to continue this process and to have that conversation with the Division of Drinking Water. My point was simply to say and to clarify for your board that a final agreement will have to come before your board before S&T is dissolved, before the agreement is finalized. But your conceptual approval is needed in order for the two parties to contact the district office and to continue this process. Changing the motion to simply say that you're providing this direction to staff will not accomplish that purpose and will not be sufficient for the district and S&T Mutual to move forward in this process with step four.
Now I'm reading that paragraph in here where it says that, and as long as, I mean, we need to have the conceptual approval so that the process can move forward. But I like the beginning of that paragraph too, though. It says where there are many issues that need to be addressed and questions be answered before a formal agreement can be brought forward for consideration. So I think if we look at that whole paragraph, then I think that answers my concerns and it clarifies what you're saying right now. It's just allowing the process to move forward, but it's not committing us to a decision. That's my concern.
Yeah, I like the motion as it's published, and I'm going to go ahead and move that the board conceptually approve the water system consolidation request from S&T Mutual Water Company.
Before we go forward, can I ask Mark a question? So,
Mr. Zimmer?
Yeah.
Yes.
So in your letter, you say you guys charge monthly, and so the numbers don't kind of work out. Can you help me understand what they should be?
Well, when I looked at those numbers, I did look up some monthly bills under those amount of billing units, and the number in the report wasn't what the customer bill was. So there was quite a bit of difference there. So I don't know. Beth said she had the spreadsheet and put it together. I don't know how that was compiled. And so I just know that I wanted to look at actual bills of customers and say, is this truly what that number would be? We predominantly looked at 6 billing units, you know, figuring that maybe S&T's has small water usage like that. That would be about the average number that you may see in a monthly bill. And then the fact of the service charge, you have a monthly service charge, you have to look at and account for those. There may not be as much discrepancy in that service charge. I didn't really go through and go to that analysis level. I just looked at the end result. I looked up a few customer bills and I said, that's just not the right number.
Okay, so it's just that, I mean, I've kind of looked at trying to calculate the difference, and because the bills are put together in different ways and there's a service charge, it's not just the, you know, it's very hard to get the real numbers. So,
I understand that. And that's why, you know, if you're going to do an analysis like that, it's going to take some work and effort to really go through and do it accurately. And I don't know what, I haven't really had the opportunity to discuss any of this with S&T. We tried to get together with them and talk about it. We'd be welcome. You know, we'd love to sit at the table and go through all of this and really talk about, you know, what does Golden State have to offer? I know the governance is a big part of S&T. I hear that loud. You know, community, I've been working here since 2007. You guys are a strong community. I fully understand that. So that is something that, you know, you would definitely want to consider. But what I do want to make sure that we do is we get these numbers right. We also get, what does Golden State bring to the table? And, you know, you may talk about the for-profit part of it. So that part of it is, you know, we are a regulated utility. We have shareholders. Those shareholders buy shares of our company. We take that and turn that into a capital investment. That doesn't go into my pocket or executive management's pocket. That's not a profit. That whole statement is completely off the mark of what a regulated utility represents. What we do is we're required to reinvest that back into the system. And that's why we have such a strong capital program. And that's the part I was trying to explain, why it's so beneficial to a small community like Los Osos, because you have a lot of residual funding that comes in from the corporation at that level. As each shareholder puts in, they don't just put it in for Los Osos, they put it into the company. So you get a lot of benefit from us being part of Los Osos too. And those are the kind of things I'd really like people to understand. The fact is, you talk about the condition of S&T's system. Golden State would actually, there's a value to that system. We would actually purchase that and cut each shareholder a check for their portion of the system. So there's things like that, that when they talk about, they went out and did public review. Did the shareholders actually know those kind of things existed in their evaluation and determination? And then, you know, overall, we got our work cut out in the basin. We really want to make sure that we're strong going through the district. Ron and I work together really closely. You talked about that. We got to make sure that that pipeline is a concern of mine as from operations, been operating water systems for 25 years. To cut a pipeline through another water system is confusing. When that water system, when that line breaks, that's the only connection to the S&T community. Golden State has the opportunity to connect to multiple points to their system and provide reliability. Then you talk about the nitrate. We have a nitrate removal treatment system that can treat a large portion of the upper aquifer that's untapped, that could really help our seawater intrusion. There's a lot of benefits that we could sit there and go through and evaluate.
I mean, I appreciate all that.
I just wanted to share.
Way beyond the question about what was in,
like
you
say, I don't mean to take your time, but
motion already on the table, and I appreciate your question. But yeah, to me, that's
watch the UAC meeting. Watch the last UAC meeting. Okay. UAC.
Thank you.
I'm ready to second that motion. I would like to make sure that you do keep track of hours, that kind of thing. This question keeps coming back up. If it ever gets to a point where it would be, I can't imagine that the money we would spend drawing up an agreement to be reimbursed would ever equal what you're going to be putting into this. Attorneys' times are expensive, and then we'd have to have some advice.
Keep track of my time.
Yeah, please keep track of your time. But that's my second, that we take the conceptual approval and leave it in this motion.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Okay. Laura, can we have a roll call, please?
Director Forcroy.
Yes.
Director Sesenia.
Yes.
Director Gatchell.
Yes.
Vice President Womack.
Yes.
President Ohilski.
Yes, based on my understanding of legal counsel's interpretation.
From one counsel to another.
There you go. Okay. So with that, then we'll move on to item 8B, discussion on the park space in Los Osos, future admission fee to Montano de Oro State Park, and direction to staff to submit a correspondence to the County of San Luis Obispo regarding the park issues. The recommendation is submitting a correspondence to the county regarding park issues. That being said, I'll turn it over to you, Ron.
Okay, I'll try to frame this up. I know there's a lot of people here that'd like to comment, so I'll make this brief. It's well known, especially to people in this room, that we've historically been underparked in terms of space. The standard is, and this is in our community plan, 3 acres per 1,000 residents. So this would equate to about 42 acres. Currently, we have 6.2 acres. That's our community park over on Palisades. But I did want to note, and this was part of the motivation, as with the approval or tentative approval of the community plan by the Coastal Commission, it'll go back to the board and then back to Coastal. One of the sections says Los Osos has one community park, 6.2 acres. In addition, Los Osos residents have convenient access to Montana de Oro State Park and other special recreation facilities. And I won't read all of those. And then we have public schools to augment the community's recreational facilities. So that was a key thing that was brought out discussing this with a couple of the board members. We feel that stating that Los Osos residents have convenient access to Montana de Oro implies that this is fulfilling a part of our lacking park space in town. The reason this is important, you know, that back in June 2009, the Board of Supervisors did approve a contract with State Parks that would allow construction of a kiosk on Pecho Valley Road and charge entry fees. Part of that agreement, State Parks agreed that to meet four criteria, offer an annual single pass single family pass at an approximate cost of $25, offer free day use for volunteers who serve in the local district with at least 40 hours service annually. Then a couple of others, this was directing revenues towards the development and maintenance of trails in new park properties being acquired in the Irish Hills, and agree to proposed amendments, and this is also important, to operating agreements relative to rent payments, capital improvements at Morro Bay Golf Course, as submitted by State Parks under previous cover. So all of this, it appears in the negotiations between the state and the county, that it appears that the county used the road into Montana de Oro for approval of the kiosk and entry fee as a bargaining tool to better receive better terms on the other parts of the operating agreement, which include Morro Bay Golf Course, Cayucas Vets Hall, Cayucas Pier, and other amenities. And the current operating agreement is in effect through August 24th. There is going to be a board hearing to, again, approve an extension of that. That is, the date of that is uncertain at this point in time. So the outcome of the state and county negotiation process, sometime in the future, Los Osos residents will lose free access. Could, I should say, this isn't a done deal, but could lose free access to one of the park recreation areas identified in the community plan as a mitigation for not having adequate parklands within the community. This, in essence, we believe, leaves Los Osos citizens paying for a part of better terms in an operating agreement for other facilities outside of Los Osos. There are other impacts that Montana de Oro puts on us. There's an estimated 700,000 vehicle trips into the park annually. Though there may be some economic benefit, may trickle down to some of our local restaurants. There's also a lot of risks from increased congestion and, you know, the many intersections, and just the general traffic that it causes through the core of our town. So that's my presentation. We do the direction, or the recommendation is to direct staff to write a letter taking in all the comments made from the board and the public tonight, and then authorize the president or his designee to sign and submit. And with that, we can have a conversation.
Thank you, Ron. I have a question. In these discussions or negotiations or whatever you want to call them, have they discussed at all the fact that we're providing fire service to Montana de Oro? Because we're providing that at the expense of our residents, and they're not paying for it.
Well, it's more complicated than that. When our agreement with County Fire, there were concessions, financial concessions that they made for us, and this was back in our 2004 agreement, to provide that service out there. So it's probably not factual to say that we provide service at no cost, that we get compensated by, for instance, we don't pay for the battalion chief's salary and training officer and some other things in there. But it is a concern because we are responding more and more out to the park. We've got some recent data that we still need to crunch through that I think we need to present to the board at some point. It's not only Montana de Oro, but there's other areas to the east of town as well.
Yeah, I just, that's a concern of mine that we're providing a fire service.
It's a valid concern.
Thank you.
Yeah,
I had the same thing from ESAC meeting. We've been talking to the state, and I think we should have at least an opportunity in this letter to state that concern as an impact. And take that opportunity to get in front of the county.
Yeah, I would just be careful because we don't want to confuse what we're doing here, because we're going to have another discussion about the county contract coming up soon. And I think it would be better that we kind of keep it to our desire for parks and not mix in the fire service.
Yeah, I knew the mix would be happening, but it is a valid thing for us.
Well, we do have, the CSD has a Parks and Rec jurisdiction. We have a Parks and Rec fund and committee, which is why this is something that we're discussing. And like the staff report shows, MDO is one of our parks in town. And I can't wait to hear public comment and see what the community thinks about paying for that in the future, or having to stop at the front gate potentially. So we tied it to the parks, and we tied it to that community plan update to really kind of have those ties to make this argument stronger. There's a whole nother discussion to have about other parks and rec or park and rec opportunities in town. There's a combined committee between the advisory council and the CSD that's working. And there's two completely different topics, but with Sunnyside School and Cuesta Inlet as some other pieces of the pie here in town. So it's good that we're getting community involvement here with this, and those issues, we're going to need help on those also.
Yep. There's plenty of opportunity for the county to spend money here.
So, Ron, when you say that the approved community plan contains this language, that was the plan that was just approved by Coastal. It's back before the county, waiting for their approval of the amendments. I mean, does it need another amendment? I mean, you can't take claim for mitigation and then throw that mitigation away without compensation for it. If Montaña de Oro is our mitigation for not having parks in town, you can't take that away and not provide parks in town.
And there's no, you know, the conversation isn't going that it's imminent. This is just something in the future, you know. So if that makes it, I think, difficult. But, you know, Director Fourcroy is absolutely right that, you know, when the community plan was approved and it does appear that they're using Montaña de Oro as a bargaining right. chip, and that impacts our community.
Maybe they can exempt us from the fee, because I know there's a park in San Francisco and residents don't pay.
Yeah. That, would...
that okay. could be in the letter.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, let's go to public comment then.
If you're online, please raise your hand. And if you're in the boardroom, please come up to the podium. And Marshall, I also have four that were written in that I will read when we're done.
Okay, you can read them at the end then. Thank you.
Thank you.
My name is Pamela. I live here in Los Osos. I enjoy that park. I like being able to just drive there and use it and hike it and walk along the trails. What I've noticed over the years is the impact that the promotion of that park statewide, nationwide, has had on the traffic coming through town, on the parking along at the park. Now there's hardly any parking. I try to go during the day, during the week, because on the weekends, you can't find any parking. And if I talk to the people on the trail, they're from San Diego, San Francisco, everywhere but here, which is fine. But to turn around and now put a kiosk and charge everybody for the use of the park, especially since, as I'm just finding out, that any money that comes from that is not going to come back here and benefit the people of Los Osos. I didn't realize that there was mitigation, that is considered one of our parks because we don't have the proper acreage. I agree with the idea that all we do is show our ID, and if we're local, we get in. Anybody else that wants to come here, okay, pony up, you know, pay your fee to help maintain the park. And, you know, if they're going to send the money to Irish Hills and to the Vets Hall in Cayucas, and it's not going to come here, it seems like Los Osos is on a lose-lose-lose end. There's no win-win-win in any of this. And we need to make sure that we're heard and we're recognized and that we're adequately compensated, either by returning money, and maybe that, and additionally, not charging the residents for the use of this park that we love so much. I would be more accepting of the impact of people coming from all over the place to enjoy that park if I get in for free and they have to pay. But if I have to pay and they have to pay and I'm going there, it just doesn't work. So something needs to be done to that effect. Thank you.
Hello, everyone. My name is Shane Crockett. Thank you, everybody at the board, for standing up for your community in support of continuing us to have access to one of our greatest resources here. My question would be, if one of the benefits for residents of Los Osos would be a free fee, just curious to see the time frame, if there is some sort of kiosk. So I'm a little nervous. Los Osos, I just, a little history about, you know, me, my father, my mother, and my older siblings moved to Los Osos in 1993. My dad's a carpenter, and this is a affordable place to live on the coast. That's why they moved here, and part of that is on the coast. And, you know, it's not on the coast if Montana de Oro isn't part of it. They bought their house for $100,000 in 1993. I just bought a house for $900,000. And So it's undeniable that even in the last 5 years, it's a different place than the place I grew up in. So, you know, I just had a boy. It's all about me right now, but, you know, I want him to be able to enjoy it like I did. And it's a fundamental difference if there's a kiosk there. We're lined up at 8 o'clock in the morning. So yeah, it's important to me. So thank you guys.
Yeah. Thank you.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Mark Fasori. I'm a longtime resident of Los Osos, and, I guess my question would be to all of you on the board is, are you here tonight to serve the people of Los Osos? Is that your goal? Because if it is, charging to get into that park to the people of Los Osos, and particularly right now in a time when prices have escalated, he just mentioned the cost of a home, you know, this is a kick in the teeth, quite frankly. And it brings a lot of other questions to mind. One of them would be access to the park. A lot of us that surf, a lot of the guys in this room are out there very early in the morning. And if the state's going to run that kiosk and not open till 8 o'clock, we're going to have a traffic jam like you've never seen. You'll think congestion. And when you see that, it'll be much worse than anything we've had. But more than that, much more than that, this is a very, very special place, and people that can't appreciate it, they're never going to appreciate it. So, but those of us who live for it, those of us who have built their life around it, you know, I just think that you should do everything you can to step in the middle of this and not let the county or the state force us into anything like this. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Hello, Shane Stoneman, Los Osos resident. Along the lines of what Mark said, I think it's important to, and what Shane said, you know, otherwise, if we don't have access to the beach, we're like Alameda in the Bay Area or something. We have access to the bay, but we don't have access to the ocean without paying for it. All the people that love Montana de Oro, we're kind of all caretakers out there, and I don't think we need... I hope we can battle the state and keep them from having to put this in. There have been a lot of, you know, expensive changes lately. You know, you got Mission Country Disposal or trash companies just doubling the bills. It's just kind of a lot to, you know, lifestyle changes over and over. So I'm completely against it. And thank you for hearing my comment.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Hello, my name is Sarah Espy, and I'm a born and raised local of Los Osos. My dad moved here when he was a year younger than me. I'm 19 years old, and he moved here when he was 18 to live with Shane Stoneman, actually, or Shane. And he actually moved here to be closer to MDO. It's a space of remembrance for the people that came here before us on this land. And I think more than congestion, respect is a big issue out there. And that comes from the people that don't understand what it means to come from this land. And they trash our beaches, and it could be as simple as that. But I've spent hours picking up trash, partially because I love being in the ocean and I hate looking to my left or to my right and seeing plastic just floating all around me and killing our animals and wildlife. And so I think that if there was a kiosk, I stand behind everyone that spoke before me on this issue about having people who aren't from here pay a small fee to understand what it means to be here and know that they have to earn entry to this land. But people who have been raised here know what it takes to take care of this land. And like Shane said, we are caretakers and we know what that means. And if we can spread the word of honoring that, I think that would be more important than charging people who know what that already means. And I think that if we're all maybe distributed some sort of card that just swiped at any time of the day, like we've said before, surfers are out there before the crack of dawn. And if it doesn't open till 8, people are going to find a way around. We're going to hike in, bike in. There's going to be people going to waves because that's what we've always done. It's been around for longer than any of us. And I spend almost every day out there after I get off work. So if I had to pay every day that I get in, I would not afford to pay rent, but I wouldn't be afford to go to my favorite places on this coast that my parents changed their entire lives to be here for. So thank you.
Hello, my name is Elliot Johnson. I'm a Los Osos resident, and I speak on behalf of quite a few people. Very similar mentality of that park is a very special place. Many people have built their lives around that park, and losing access to it would change our lives dramatically. And I would highly encourage, we can look to other places as a good example. The North Shore of Kauai, for example, they've started limiting. These places are getting loved to death, right? Who does not want to go out there? It's beautiful. The resources, the trails, hiking, surfing, mountain biking, bird watching. I saw a mountain lion the other day. It's amazing. To limit the access potentially, it is very hard to park out there. If we look to the example of the North Shore of Kauai, you need to get a permit before you go. You don't have to stop and drive in and pay, swipe, show a pass. You get your permit. I mean, in our high-tech society, you get the permit, you drive in, you park. That's something that may help limit the park, keep it open. My main concern, 24/7 access. I mean, I know we can't go out there and hike in the middle of the night now. Having that open before sunrise and after sunset is crucial to that park and those who use it on a regular basis. I thank you for your time, support. It's a great community. It's a beautiful park. Let's let everyone enjoy it to its maximum potential. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Angela Avila, and I'm also a resident here in Los Osos, and I just want to agree with what everybody else has said before regarding us being able to come without paying a fee, the hours that we would be able to come. But I'd also like to talk about our students here. I'm a teacher at Los Osos Middle School, and our families that are able to bring their kids for free right now that learn to appreciate nature, the beauty in nature, the science that they see. Our kids are on their screens way too much. And this gives, this teaches them how to appreciate being outside. And I know my kids, once they got older, would go on their own too. So I think it's really important to think about the future of the children here and what that gives them. Also, schools regarding parks as schools, you can't go to a school when school is open, obviously, right? So that is limited to park time. That's something nobody's brought up before too. But I would just like to say, I think it's really important that our kids have a chance and are encouraged to get outside, because that's creating future scientists
future artists, and it's really important. Thank you.
Hello, I'm Richard Burke, and I live off of Pecho Road, and I'm about a 44-year resident here. And I do want to echo a couple of things. And as far as the letter that you're recommending, the first thing outside of the letter, I would ask you to, if you could let us know in your discussion about who the contacts are at the county. In this way, we might be able to bring our opinions forward. I imagine it's you have a contact at Park and Recreations, et cetera, or if you have somebody at the state that you're dealing with. For those of us that met that missed the discussions back in 2009, we might be able to help by having the community contact them directly. Going back to historically, I don't exactly remember this, but about 35 years ago, there was a meeting, and the state park head of state park got up at the meeting, and he said, "This is the only state park without a kiosk," and there was like 300 people at the meeting. And the head of the state park said, "Well, if we don't have a kiosk, then we won't improve it." And everybody in the community said, "Yes." So anyways, that multiple times this has come forward in Los Osos, and it is a special place in Los Osos. I'm a surfer, so I go out there, of course, early in the morning, sometimes 5:30, sometimes earlier. And I also go down out there in the daytime in different parts of the park. And I like to, one thing that's really impacted me is the other visitors that I see that are not as lucky as we are to be so close to that park. For example, when you go down to Spooner's Cove or Hazards or somewhere like that, and you talk to the people on the beach, you often see a young mother or young father with three children, and they're coming from Grover Beach or Arroyo Grande. Why do they come to Montana de Oro? It's one of the few places they can bring their family that doesn't cost them anything. So if you're going to, if they're, first of all, I'm opposed to, like probably every resident in Los Osos, to being a $25 fee. But I'm also, if there is a fee, I would say that it would be, there should be, I don't like 40 hours. I think there should be people, low-income people should get free access to that park. Because that's, I could afford the $25 myself. But I can tell you, I see mothers and families down there all the time that I know, I believe they cannot afford that. $25 is just a high tax for a low-income family. And I would say, you know, I agree with Mark and the other, and Shane, who said that it is, it, in fact, they made me think what a special place it is. And the fact that the state complains, it's one of the few places where there isn't a kiosk. Mark said to me earlier that actually, why don't we set the trend where we set the goal so that other state parks should be free? Why is it be that we should have a kiosk because all the other state parks do? Maybe they should be looking at less kiosks.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Hello, Emily again, and I'm sorry for my, it wasn't at you, it was in the back of the room, my outburst. But I wanted to say that I totally support the letter, and I think it's really, really important. My sister's an executive at California State Parks, and she knows how important, you know, this is to this community because of our lack of kind of just on the ground, you know, parks and ability for children to play. And there's nothing that I love more than going out there and seeing, you know, locals and being able to like identify who's who on the trail. And there is heavy, you know, traffic from out of area, as was well presented here. And I wanted to just share a personal story. I don't know if Christine, you brought up congestion. Someone brought up congestion, and it does happen. When we moved here, because my parents are in Morro Bay to help them, you know, at their end of life, we were impressed that Los Osos had negotiated this over time to keep Montana de Oro open to our community and to others around our state. In, I can't remember what year it was, but we were living in Walnut Creek, and Walnut Creek has incredible public parks. It's a city, so there's, and it has an unincorporated area as well. But I just wanted to share this story. When the kiosk went in, so it was probably, I don't know, 12, 13 years ago, it suddenly, the weekend trips just to get up and go enjoy the trails, the state park trails, et cetera, for that local community, even with all the pools and the, you know, small recreation areas and HOAs, et cetera, around that larger community, suddenly it was half an hour to get through that kiosk on a weekend, which makes me think about the families here in Los Osos and what we heard from people today. Like, does a mom and dad actually have time to sit for maybe half an hour? What if it's 45 minutes? We don't know right now. But I think those type of considerations really need to be expressed. So I thank the CSD for really standing up and advocating for the town. Thanks.
Thank you.
Becky McFarland, and thank you. The first time I was in Montana de Oro, I think I was 18 or 19, and drove through there and went, wow, I want to live here. What a spot. The next time we came through, I was married and I was 27 years old. We moved here and our first home was Montana de Oro State Park. We camped there until we were able to find a two-bedroom home for $445 a month. Incredible, with a yard and a garage. But, you know, I've had businesses where I, called the Traveling Sea School, where I taught kids about the ocean. So many kids can't get there, but we also met groups out there. And, you know, teaching kids how to appreciate and take care of the place. The amount of traffic that goes out there now, I mean, you used to be able to go out and there was no one parked on the bluff. And then I saw Sunset Magazine and I'm like, oh my gosh. And now I don't know if you guys are aware of Discovery Route, Highway 1 Discovery Route website that our County Business Improvement District has out, but they are blasting this park out everywhere. And as part of that, and it happens there at the Broderson Trail where I live. And that might be something to, the community needs to discuss. Do we want a tourist town? Or do we want our town where tourists visit, but it's not a tourist town? I hate to see people be charged to go in there. It is a big thing for a parent to have to sit in a car with little kids in the car seat if you're waiting to get in. It's a narrow road. There's, you know, luckily there's not as many giant motorhomes on there, but it's kind of scary. So please stand up for no entrance fee for Los Osans. I would really not like to see a kiosk at all. My first job here, well, after house cleaning, was a park aide for the state parks with Morro Bay State Park. It is free to go there. You have to pay to camp, but you can hike up Black Hill and things like that. It's important to have free things for people. And thank you so many people for coming here. I want to say I was a surfer down in Southern California, and you guys are amazing. It's too cold up here, and it's incredibly rough. So I'm very appreciative of that, but I am a surf artist. I painted pictures for all my brother's cool surfer friends, and I still do that. And I take pictures at Montana de Oro and drive in free, and it's a wonderful place. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Sean Dudley, lifetime resident, family's third generation, owned the Texaco gas station here in Los Osos long, long time ago. Montana de Oro, what can you say? It's just, it's a holy land out there. Before this meeting, I came and I kind of was wavering. Do we have a kiosk or do we not? And because, like, you know, $25 is not that much, but, you know, like, it's just to keep it open. I was thinking about when my son was a little baby and he's crying in the middle of the night and I'm driving him out there to get him to go to sleep at 3 a.m, driving all the way out to Coon Creek and back, trying to get him to go to sleep, and just how nice it was to be able to have a nice place to drive. And I think it would be a real shame to have that place where you have to have admission to go out there. And also, my mother-in-law and father-in-law moved up from Southern California a long time ago in the 60s, and their favorite surf spot was San Onofre State Beach. And to get into their favorite beach now, you have to get there probably like 4 a.m. to get a spot there to surf. And I don't want to see that out at Montana Doro or anywhere in California. So yeah, let's keep it open for the public and all the locals. And thank you for listening to me.
Richard Margetson. For the gentleman who was interested in contact, I think everybody here should let everybody else that's interested know. Send a letter to your supervisor, Bruce Gibson. Also, I find it very interesting that this is a parks issue, and our parks commissioner is not in the room to listen to these comments. It's unbelievable. We've had a parks commissioner for what, Chuck? It's going on 22 years now, 24 years, and she's never at any of these meetings, and it's really irritating. But the more letters you send, the more people that show up, you have a chance of making a difference. Coastal Commission's all about coastal access. I mean, every hearing appeal you hear, it's all about coastal access. Well, putting a kiosk up in a community with basically one major park, or one park, limits coastal access to, I believe it's discriminatory. It limits access to people on fixed income. It limits access to those that can't get out there by themselves. And I'm wondering when they get involved in doing this, I have an example of how this can get really complicated with a kiosk. My business partner moved to Michigan, and there's a beach on, access to a beach on Lake Michigan, and they have a kiosk. And they keep count, like at the parking structure downtown, number of cars go in, as they come out, you can't get access back in. That's what this kiosk at this beach has. And you can sit in line, which we have done, sit in line for 20 minutes, and you get up and they go, oh, there's no more parking places. There's no access. And you turn around at the kiosk and you go back home. I believe that people go out there to park. I believe people go out there just to drive through sometime. They've got a half hour. They're just going to drive through, look at the scenery, look at the ocean. Last comment. This Montana Doro is also special to me because I had a granddaughter. My son and his kids visited 3 years ago. And I had a granddaughter who's 16. They were here 6 days. She went out there every day she was here and cried when they went home. She asked her dad, can I stay and live with grandpa? She fell and picked up trash when she was there, picked up stuff, brought it back to the car. Fell in love with the place. It's a special place. It should be open to the community for free.
Thank you, Richard.
I'll say one more quick thing. That's okay. I had 50 seconds left last time.
Okay.
Okay, so I was just reminded by a few things that other people said, and I was one of the babies that my dad drove out there when I was like, could not stop crying. And so that was the one thing that would put me back to sleep. And I hope to do that for my kids one day. and hopefully at no cost. But there's just so many angles that we could look at this. There's so many different reasons why it should stay open to everyone, but especially the Los Osos locals. And I've recently ventured into becoming a community herbalist, and the abundance of medicine in MDO is so full. Like, everything you could possibly imagine that grows in California is so happy there, and it's free if you know how to harvest it in reverence to the land and you have permission from an elder. And herbalism translates to the people's medicine, and it doesn't make sense to capitalize on where the people's medicine grows. So that is my last comment.
Thank you.
Lindy Owen, again, I have almost 40 years here, so, and I've always been an advocate for parks and trees and open space and those kinds of things that balance out life in a beautiful way. Shush. And I have a few gripes. I think they're all legitimate, too. We apparently get about $24 million in property taxes that come from Los Osos go to the county. We've asked for an accounting. It's too complicated because it also covers sheriffs and all these other things. But we have a problem at our little 6.5-acre park. They can't even replant the trees. It just goes on and on and on. We've had community groups have to go out and ask permission to plant trees. It gets to the point where you're going, why do we even pay taxes if we get nothing back? The property that I call the Tri-W sewer property is what was destroyed in the prior sewer nightmare. That property is paid for by people that pay a sewer bill. We don't get a penny from anywhere else, yet it's open to the public. So, you know, they don't ever like to mention that, but that is being paid for by anybody that pays a sewer bill. That property had to be purchased because they destroyed it and it's mitigation, blah, blah, blah. And we pay for maintenance on that too, as well as the Broderson, we pay for maintenance on that. That comes out of our sewer bill money. So we are already paying for parks that we're missing 42 acres, folks. I think it's absurd. Our little playground over here at the park, we had people with kids getting sick from the tire material that was deteriorating. It was off. I mean, it was awful stuff. The county said, no, there's a 5-year life expectancy left on that, so we're not going to replace it. We, the community, again, about $10,000 and many, many hours of donated labor, had to go in and replace that. The county still doesn't want to give us that $10,000 back, even though that it's been over 5 years and the new chips are much better for the kids. I think Montana, I was here when we did the 2009, and Gibson was busy trying to get the money. It was something about some money coming in for the AT&T lines that run up through Montana de Oro. And we had to fight him to say that we did not want a kiosk. I don't believe we should have a kiosk. I like the idea that we should maybe start making less parks have kiosks. This is what keeps people sane in this country, in this world right now. And I totally oppose any kind of fee for anybody that lives here. Keep Montana de Oro free.
Thank you, Lindy. Okay, Laura, I think we're done over here.
All right, I have one online. Constance, you just have to unmute yourself.
Thank you. Constance Hart, 20-year resident. I would be a longer resident if I had been led to Los Osos earlier. I wish I was born here. And Montaña de Oro is the reason why. It's the crowning glory of our town, of our community. Nature is a healer. And there are many beautiful, special, spiritual people that live here in our community that are doing really transformative work to help the common man and woman that is stressed and tense because we have access to this beautiful park. It's a precious nature energy vortex. And I agree with others I've heard. I think Montaña de Oro should continue to be free, especially for us residents. The kiosk idea is simply not a match to the community. Complaining about traffic and the lack of parking at Montaña de Oro the way it is right now, well, you could blame that on the pandemic. I've been going to Montaña de Oro almost every day since I've lived here. I volunteer at Sweet Springs, and since the pandemic, people found it, okay? But also people are changing and we need nature in our life. I'm not a very political person typically. I don't really understand even fully what it means to be an unincorporated town, but my sense of it is that we share a common goal and common ideas. And I think I just want to thank you for supporting Montaña de Oro, and having nature in our lives is super important. Should be free and uncomplicated. And we already have a traffic problem at the school. You know, there's a long line of traffic with parents picking up their children. So actually, I don't know why. I'm definitely against the kiosk idea. I like the idea, maybe if we're going to get stuck with doing something like that. Somebody mentioned the idea of a prepaid permit for out-of-towners. And then my last comment is, we are turning into a tourist town. And I think we need to be careful as a community to being lured by people coming in that want to pay you $750,000 for your $450,000 house. Be careful. Thanks for listening.
Thank you.
All right.
Did you say you had a few letters to read?
I do. Jim Perlett, as a longtime resident of Los Osos and a frequent visitor to Montaña de Oro State Park, I am opposed to any interest fees being put in place unless those fees are used to significantly improve services at the park. It seems like adoption of any new fees should require a vote by the citizens or the town or the county. Thank you. Donald Burlingame, he wrote, absolutely no. Once again, the county seeks to break promises to Los Osos in order to benefit other communities' unrelated issues. My wife and I have been residents here in Los Osos since 1993 and have seen all of the dirty tricks played by the county on our community over and over again. We will actively support any and all efforts to stop this. Any politician wishing for our votes in future needs to understand their stance on this will directly affect our support of them. Donna Marino, she writes, as many of us lucky residents who have chosen to live in Los Osos, one of the natural attractions to the area was the ability to enjoy the beauty of Montaña de Oro and the outdoor recreational opportunities allowed. It is a wondrous natural beauty that all should be able to appreciate in a non-commercialized environment. It belongs to people. Our taxes are collected and distributed to maintain the natural beauty. Schooner House is a wonderful museum showing the historical value of this property, which may collect donations for its upkeep. Campers pay for campsite maintenance. We should not be charged for entry to this wild and natural park. Thank you. And the last one is David Valadez. He writes, I would like to put forth my name on behalf of my family to support keeping MDO free. This is one of the reasons why we bought here in Los Osos, was for the nearby free access to these trails. We moved here from SLO before, and with all these trails open space there, it was important to still have local trails that were free for us to use. No matter the dollar amount, putting costs for locals to have to use their local free space is not appropriate and a step backward for the value of our town. Thank you.
Thank you. Is that it, Laura?
That is it.
Okay. Anybody else in the room? Okay. Seeing none, we'll close it to public comment. I'll tell you one thing that I've noticed in the discussion here, and I just want to make sure everybody understands that there's a distinction here. The fee is different than having a kiosk. because the kiosk restricts the hours that you can access the park. So I don't want people just thinking that getting rid of the fee does anything. It really doesn't, because you can't access the park before 8 o'clock. So if you're going out there to surf at daybreak, you can't do that. So I really think it's, in my perspective, it's more important not to have the kiosk at all, mm-hmm. period. That's my opinion.
Is that actually stated that the kiosk is going to limit hours or?
Yes.
Yeah.
Is there a location proposed?
The end of Pecho Road up by, this is what I've understood in talking to parks people, up by where the, you know, where those, right at the top of the road before it curves off where the horses go up the trail there, that's where I was told it's going to be.
So I agree with the kiosk piece, not even having one. I'm actually facing this issue out in my house in Joshua Tree in our community. I have a house outside Joshua Tree West entrance, and they're actually moving the kiosk another mile in the park because the lines to get in the park are 2 to 3 miles long, and impacting the community. So putting a kiosk on that road is just going to be disastrous coming down Pecho Valley and the line of cars. Even if we get in free,
yeah,
people are just going to be irritated waiting in a holiday weekend to get in.
Well, we had a question in there about who to contact. I know it got answered sort of through Bruce Gibson. The other contact is Tanya Richardson.
Still work there?
County Parks. Parks. So that is definitely a person to contact. I want to see this letter not only go to the County Board of Supervisors, but also Tanya. And I'm not sure who the appropriate person at State Parks is, but I want us to figure out who that is as well.
Well, it needs to go to the Coastal Commission too.
Okay.
The way this worked, and just to give, when the Coastal Commission adopted it, they made changes to the community plan, then they sent it back to the Board of Supervisors to accept those changes or make further changes. And then it goes back to the Coastal Commission allegedly in January for certification. So,
yeah, that makes sense.
So I think maybe our letter should state no kiosk at all.
I agree.
Versus like free resident pass.
Yeah, I
think, strongly worded.
Well, what we're asking for is the county's going to be renegotiating an operating agreement with State Parks.
Right.
And what we want is for that to be removed from the operating agreement.
Yeah.
It's in there right now. It's going to expire in this month. So the next one, we don't want a kiosk or fees in there.
Yeah, agree.
Why did they never put the kiosk in during the last period?
I'm sorry.
I don't know the answer to that, though.
I thought it was because county owned the road and state didn't own the road, so they couldn't put it in.
That's what they said at the last meeting in 2009.
Yeah.
They were saying they couldn't close that road because of the access to
right.
a family back there and potentially the campground.
Right.
But I don't trust that they're not going to close the road.
Okay, this is, I'm sorry, but this is an open discussion, so.
Okay. Well, I didn't even think about, I think it's a good point that we could have a line to get in, because I've been going out a couple times a week, and I would be really, I like to zip out there, exercise for an hour, and then come back. If I had to wait like a half hour to get in, yeah. that would be disappointing, and I probably wouldn't do it. And
Okay, please,
and then,
please.
When we had the teacher from Loams, it reminded me, like when my kid did cross country once a week on Thursdays, they go run out there, and you know we have to drive the kids in, so that would affect every person that had to, you know, that's a nice resource to be able to do cross country out there, and that would just throw an extra wrench in that. And the other person that mentioned people coming from far away, I was out there with my kid going out to Hazard Canyon, and we came across a group. It was like a summer camp of like 40 or 50 kids from Bakersfield. Like they come from pretty far. So anyway, I'm in agreement that I would prefer no kiosk.
Yeah, I think we should, as part of the letter, should start out with the fact that we don't want any kiosk, period.
And get the language out of the agreement.
Right. no kiosk, which will be no fees. And we want to have basically 24/7 access to the property. I mean,
the other piece too is we don't really know when this is coming to the Board of Supervisors. We know that it's expiring. So I'd like us to do a little bit of asking about that. Like, when is
this? Well, no, this is supposed to go back to the Board of Supervisors. Is it November still, Ron?
No, if the agreement's up this month, we're anticipating a...
No, but I'm talking about the Coastal Commission language.
Coastal, it would go back November.
November.
Yeah, but the Board of Supervisors goes back on this issue.
We need to do it sooner than that, yeah.
Yeah.
Because the agreement's separate from the community plan.
Sure. Right, yeah, this has no bearing on the community plan. I don't think there's any language in the community plan about, other than that little blurb here.
Right, exactly.
But I'm glad we got so much public comment. Thank you for everybody coming down. This is much easier than going to Board of Supervisors on Tuesday during work in the middle of the day. I think, you know, what I'd like to see as far as the public comment, I think we had so many, maybe a summary in the letter and a list of the speakers.
We can try for the list, but I've been writing, and Laura, I'm sure, has too, been summarizing the comments as we go.
Well, yeah. The bottom line, I mean, the motion I'm going to make is no kiosk, period. So, I mean, I'm making it simple.
Well, and I'm okay with make it long. Show them all the people that came to speak up.
I'm not saying I'm not, you can't put that in though. I'm just saying that's
at least 19, 20 speakers. So right. That's important. I mean, for us, that's a lot of speakers.
That is very much a lot.
No, I think it's important. I mean, you know, we need to find out when this is going back to the Board of Supervisors, the agreement.
Right.
So somebody ought to contact Tanya and find out.
Someone?
Yeah.
Okay. Got it.
Put on your cape.
Yeah.
We want Superman to do it. That's you.
Got it.
That's why you need assistant. Delegate.
So anyway, what I would like to do then is make a motion that we have the general manager draft a letter to the Board of Supervisors, which includes the discussion points from the people in the audience and their concerns, as long with a list of what we can of who the speakers were. And then just bottom line is that we're against any kiosk and any restrictions on access to the park, period.
Got it.
That's my motion.
I'll second it, but I'd like to see it go to Coastal Commission and State Parks.
Oh yeah. No, it's got to go and to recreation people locally. Mm-hmm. No question. It has to go to Coastal Commission, has to go to State Parks, has to go to County Parks. Everybody.
Yep.
Parks Commission. Yep.
Yep. That sounds good.
Pandora. Okay. Anybody going to? Oh, you're going to second it?
Matthew seconded it. We're good to go.
Let's have a roll call again, please, for the record, so that Ron can put that in his letter.
President Olhilsky.
Yes.
Director Forcroy.
Yes.
Director Sesenia.
Yes.
Director Gatchell.
Yes.
Vice President Womack.
Yes.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, everybody. Have fun.
Yes. Thank everybody. Okay, you can go out to Montana de Oro now before it gets dark. All right, we'll move on to item number 9. Should we? Do we want to take? Anybody want to take a break here for a rough pit stop?
No, let's do it.
Okay. Item number 9: public comment for items not on the agenda. Does anybody have a public comment for items not on the agenda?
If you're online, raise your hand, and if you're in the boardroom, come to the podium.
I've got one person in the room here.
Hi, my name is Andrea Peck, and some of you already know me. Sorry for the repetition, Ron. But I am here to represent myself and my neighbors. I live at 1435 10th Street, where we are subject to a lot of flooding and stormwater runoff that's coming from 12th Street, 11th Street, 10th Street, and through 9 properties. The average gallons per minute, to give you an idea, is not a little trickle. It's anywhere from 3,000 to 7,000 gallons per minute, according to the engineering report that I have for my house. So I have been going back and forth with county, and I don't know what to do at this point. I'm going to request maybe that this problem can be put on the agenda. And maybe someone can look at the legal element of it, you know, from the county and from LOCSD, because, you know, to see who can actually put in storm drains in that area so that we are not having the water go on our properties. So that's, you know, if we can put that on the agenda to maybe help that problem, that's what I'm requesting. So.
We'll look at that as a future agenda item then.
Thank you.
Thank you.
There's no public comment online.
We got one more in the room.
Andrea just reminded me of our flooding situation. I'm also get flooded every time it rains hard. It pours down 10th Street. It comes into the next block that is a little bit lower, and it floods my neighbor's property, which is a sixplex, and then it floods mine. It comes into my house, it floods my garage, my entire property is underwater. And the county's response is, it's your responsibility to put a berm and keep that water out. And that is not true. The county engineered these streets, and it didn't flood before the sewer reshaping of some of the streets. I have neighbors who agree they have water now where they didn't, or they don't have water anymore. So I don't know if there's any way that you could put together a report saying the next rain season that we have some serious flooding issues, and how do we get some attention from you? I was out there with a pump draining my neighbor's property for hours, soaking wet. And the county guys drove by and said, "What are you doing?" I said, "I'm putting your water back on the street." And they go, "Oh, good luck." That's the response we get from the county. So I was friends with Bob Gehring. He was a major engineer that did all the downtown area. And he said, no, the county is responsible for the floods, the streets flooding onto your property and the bad drainage. So if you could bring that up, there's many others in town that would appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, you don't have anybody online, do you, Laura?
No, I do not.
What?
No.
Okay, we'll move on to administrative committee reports, utility department report, written only.
Correct.
General manager's report, written and verbal.
I will get back here, make this quick because it is late.
It's late.
We did have a meeting on the Slow County Growth Management Ordinance last week. We did get some dates. Last Friday, when we had to put this agenda out, there weren't firm dates for some of this, but we do on our website now have BMC presentation August 21st, LOCAC presentation August 22nd, September 27th, and October 24th. Town Hall meeting October 5th, and Board of Supervisors meeting on October 29th. So there's still details to be worked out on the town hall meeting, and I'll try to update you once I hear. Always want to remind people of our upcoming board election coming up in November. We have two seats that are up for re-election, or election, I should say. We do have maps available. We have created districts, so there's maps available. They're districts 5 and district 3 and 5. Filing period is close or coming up quickly. I'm sorry, moving here. August 9th. If an incumbent doesn't file, it's extended to August 14th. You can contact our office, myself, or talk to the clerk recorder office for more information. We are recruiting for a water resource operator. Again, you know, anyone that wants a thrilling career in water, work for a great organization, have them talk to me. And finally, I did want to say congratulate Laura on her 5-year anniversary here. She's been great. We're very fortunate to have her, and so I just want to recognize Laura and all that she has done for me and the district.
Thank you, Laura.
Yeah, agreed. You're a great asset. We are very lucky to have you.
That's the end of my report.
Okay, thank you. LOCAC verbal report. Is there any report?
It was Chuck, I think.
Chuck did it last. No,
it was actually me, but I had a personal emergency right before the meeting.
And I
tuned in late because.
Okay, we'll skip that then.
No fault of Troy's. It was just, yeah.
Parks and Rec Committee, Matthew.
We did have a meeting. What was it about? No, it was about, it was really a catch up meeting. We hadn't met in quite a while. Like I mentioned earlier, not that kind of catch up, like a reunion type catch up. We discussed essentially what's been going on at the joint LOCAC CSD Parks and Rec committee that's been meeting once a month. It's been a productive group of people to work with. We've been looking at anything and everything, and it's kind of narrowed down there. Like I mentioned, there's kind of two big things out there right now with Sunnyside School and with Quest Inlet. And then there's, you know, what else do we want to see? What does the community want? And ultimately, you know, what is the community willing to pay for? And I think what we'll see is, you know, hopefully soon is some pretty significant community outreach to answer some of those questions. And that joint committee's working on some action plans to, you know, figure out what's going on at Sunnyside. There was an appraisal. The county's been discussing it. We don't know exactly what the appraisal says, and we don't know 100% where the county's at on that. And then at Quest Inlet, there's Save Quest Inlet trying to raise the funds, but then also U.S. Fish and Wildlife is interested in essentially purchasing it and potentially having the CSD own and operate it, but there's a lot of stipulations in there. So there's a lot of different costs and benefits to be weighed on all of those different things. I think that was the gist of it.
Pretty much summarizes it. Yeah, we're trying to work towards a town hall style meeting to get this input from the community.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay, utilities advisory.
We heard all about the S&T mutual consolidation request. Mm-hmm. That was the big topic at utilities, other than runtime hours and production numbers.
Okay. Finance advisory?
The finance recommended approval of the warrant register and recommended approving the financial reports. And we got our quarterly investment report. And I believe we had over $100,000 in income and realized. And then some of those bonds are bought at discount, so you don't get your income till they mature, but I think it was an extra $66,000 of unrealized, so that's very nice. That's money we weren't getting, so I'm pleased.
Okay. Emergency services, we didn't have a meeting, so there's no report. Basin Management Committee, didn't have a meeting, no report. Director's announcement of district and community interest and reports on attendance at public meetings, training programs, conferences, and seminars. Does anybody have anything?
I do. I spent a day on a yellow bus with about 30 people touring CAPSLO locations, San Luis Obispo and North County, about a week ago. Everything from the 40 Prado homeless shelter and soon to be 46 Prado, some temporary housing, transitional housing. We went to the health clinic up on Grand Avenue, three sites in North County. CAPSLO does everything from migrant head start, early education, childcare, senior income assistance for your utility bills, veteran services. They have an adult daycare center for dementia patients in Paso that has people coming from Rio Grande and Cambria because there just aren't any others around. You want to visit a very powerful place. That was the one, especially hearing the gentleman when asked, you know, do you like, you know, what's it like coming here? Do you like coming here? And his response was, my wife likes it more than I do. There's some very tough things going on there, but it was a wonderful day. Capsulo does great work. And if you want to know more about them, just talk to me. And another thing I saw in the New Times today, the Housing Authority of San Luis Obispo is opening up their application period for Section 8 housing assistance. I think it runs for about a month, starts the second week of August. Check the New Times article. If you're interested in that program, there is housing assistance out there. And that's it.
Okay, thank you. Response to previously asked questions?
None out there.
Okay, does anybody want to pull an item on the consent agenda? Okay, seeing none, we'll take We'll take public comment for items on the administrative and committee reports and the consent agenda.
If you're online, please raise your hand.
Yes. Go ahead, lady.
I just wanted
Did
to
you state your name for the record.
Lindy please? Owen. I wanted to point out we haven't heard too much about the dog park, and I know that's complicated because we need people to stand to come forward to actually produce the financing and the infrastructure. But with the Habitat Conservation Plan cleared, it should be somewhat available. But I'm not sure if you're aware that the county is very busy using that property already for a frisbee court. They've got piles of chips in there. It's rather ridiculous that we can't plant a tree without getting a snail inspector to come out, yet they're in there having at it. So it's just another little whiny complaint of mine, but I would like to see the dog park pursued at some point in the future. And again, it's going to have to take some media coverage to get people to come forward and decide that they want to do it. So anyway, thanks.
Okay, thanks, Lindy. Nobody else in the room. Do you have anybody, Laura?
Nope, there's none online.
Okay, thank you. So can we have a motion?
I will make a motion to approve the administrative and committee reports, or to receive and file the administrative and committee reports and to approve the consent agenda.
I'll second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Laura, we're having you make another roll call here.
Do we need one?
Yep.
We don't need a roll call, but I can do one if you would
I'm trying to keep you busy tonight.
Okay. Director Forcroy.
Yes.
Director Womack.
Yes.
Director Sesenia.
Yes.
Director Gatchel.
Yep.
President Ohilski.
Yes. I just figured the meeting was so long, I had to give you some stuff. Otherwise, you might, you know.
Fall asleep.
I didn't say that. Okay, 13, discussion of pulled consent items. There was no items pulled under that. Future agenda items, a couple of items came up today during the discussion, so we'll put those down for future agenda items.
What are those?
The flooding issue, would that work through utilities and drainage to start with? Maybe. But that's one.
10th Street. Flooding.
Yep, yeah, that's one.
That's definitely.
There's two that I want to make sure we get written down. One is options to pay for the Cabrillo Basin work, the financing options that we have. And the second is additional staffing to be able to execute the work plan we have ahead of us.
Ambitious work plan.
Excellent. So future agenda items, there you go. Okay, closing board comments. Start with Chuck. You don't have anything?
I go Paris.
I'm ready. Well, first of all, thank you so much, Ron. I really appreciate you. Also, Laura, 5 years. Thank you for that. Amazing. This was a great meeting. I think we got a ton of public input on water to parks to all of it. So thank you.
That's very true. People that came for one item got a good taste of the different things that we have to deal with.
Yep.
Yeah, I'd like to express some appreciation for the public that came out and made their opinions known.
Mm-hmm. Agree.
What?
Agree with the public comments coming. I think everybody needs to go to the Boards of Supervisors and Parks and Rec office.
Yep. Okay, I agree with everybody thing that said about the community input. I thought that's very, very helpful. Now you got to follow through, not just with us, but with everybody that's involved in those decision-making process. And then I'd like to thank Ron for his service and Laura for her service, because without both of you, we wouldn't be where we are. So with that being said, I will go ahead and adjourn.
Margaret.
That was the most exciting meeting.